Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. One only has to take a short drive around downtown Tulsa's Brady District to see that there is a lot of building and investment in this area. Next week, one of those major projects will open to the public. The Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa will open their Hardesty Arts Center, a 42,000 square foot plus building devoted to the visual arts with gallery spaces, study space, studio space, outdoor gardens and performance areas, as well as classrooms for the arts. I'm joined by the CEO of the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa, Ken Busby, to talk about this project's impact on the arts in our community, as well as the economic development of the surrounding area in the Brady District. Ken Busby, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich. It's great to be here.
Well, as we speak, we're about a week or so away, a couple weeks less, from the opening of the new Hardesty Arts Center in the Brady District. And one just has to drive through the Brady Arts District and see that there are big changes from hotels to all sorts of art facilities that are already open or in the process of opening. And
Absolutely.
Yours is perhaps one of the most striking buildings.
Thank you. We think so.
And it's getting ready to open. Let's take us from the start. What was the need for the Hardesty Arts Center when you first embarked on this project? Because this has been a long project.
For me, it's been about 9 years in the making. But even before I was executive director of the Arts and Humanities Council, this is something that the board of directors have been talking about and the staff about the need for a center truly focused on the visual arts, although other things will happen at the Hardesty Arts Center, but something to really, really focus that. And then something to really focus the programs of the council. Because in our current home, Harwalden Mansion, you can't get messy. That's a place where weddings take place and parties take place. And so you can't do the messy arts, painting, drawing, that kind of thing. So the idea was, well, what could we do since we're already doing many programs throughout Tulsa County, at-risk, underserved youth? This is our mission. We're in various community centers. We're in schools and so forth. What else could we be doing more to reach out to the community? And the idea was, well, if we were able to do more after-school art programming, more family weekend programs, this would be a really terrific thing for the council, a good extension of its mission. And so once I came to the council in May of 2002, we began some serious discussions about, you know, well, Ken, this has been talked about, but what do you think? And it's like, well, yes, we should do some research and we should find out what the community really needs, because we don't want to just go out there to do something to build a new building if it's not needed. Much research later, lots of interviews, questionnaires, and so forth, we really determined there was a great need for what this could provide. So we have classroom space, we have gallery space, and we have studio space.
I'm thinking about when this first came about. Living Arts was over on 3rd Street, maybe, and mm-hmm. It was just really getting going,
right.
And very limited gallery space there. Now they have a much larger gallery space.
Which is true.
And the Tulsa Artist Coalition is mm-hmm. perhaps the only other really facility where it's showing local art in the creation and giving that sort of showcase.
Exactly.
And I assume that's a big part of what you're talking about, this showcase for local artists, because, you know, the big museums, they're basically bringing in national exhibitions and really not focusing on local art.
Right. And while we're not opposed to bringing in national artists or regional artists from time to time, the focus really is on Oklahoma artists, and certainly even within that, the Tulsa community, to really lift up, to really showcase, to really, and then also spending time working with some of our partners like the Oklahoma Visual Arts Coalition to help artists learn how to market themselves, learn how to develop portfolios, learn how to not be starving artists for the rest of life, but actually be able to make a living at it. Or, more importantly to our mission, in terms of arts education, to be able to teach some of our classes, go out into the schools, the things that we're currently doing, just an even larger facility and even more intense opportunity to be able to do that. And so lifting up the local community is really one of our primary focuses.
Yes, going back to that idea of the need for the Arts Center, has the need changed over those 9 years from when you first started envisioning and started planning for this facility? Has the need changed any at all? I mean, certainly Living Arts has a greater presence in downtown and a larger exhibit area than they used to.
Sure, and that's terrific because they're a good partner with us and have been all along. And so now we have an opportunity to even do more collaborative kinds of things. And with other organizations that will be coming online in the near future over the next 6 months in the Brady Arts District, then all of a sudden we have a really nice critical mass of gallery space and education space where a lot of cool things can happen at the same time, or a variety of opportunities that can happen in different spaces because now we have enough space to be able to do something. So to your question about has the focus really changed, Interestingly enough, it really hasn't. We've changed square footages a little bit. We've tweaked what might go where and so forth. But basically, through all of this, the general need and the general opportunity has remained constant.
One of your big focuses is on that sort of support for the beginning professional artist.
Mm-hmm.
How important is that to what you're going to be doing?
It really is critically important. Everyone needs a chance. And in the creative arts and the creative realm of what artists do, they need a place to begin, and they need a place to get established and get known. And so our hope is that this facility can really do that and really allow them to launch careers, to, you know, as I said earlier, build portfolios, understand the business of art, marketing of themselves, all those things that go into it, so that they're not just always in some hole-in-the-wall garage somewhere trying to make a living, trying to churn something
out.
Or
hitting the art and craft fairs in the summer. I mean,
right.
That's like one way of going about
which,
it.
Which is very important. And certainly you look at something like Tulsa International May Fest and some of the other great things, that and the Blue Dome Arts Festival, and those kinds of things really do showcase, and that's great, and that gives them a chance to sell and so forth. But here's a chance where they're going to be able to earn some money because they can teach for us. They can teach in our 2D, 3D, 4D classrooms. They can teach after school. They can teach on weekends. They can, we'll have open house hours so that they can sell their art and meet with arts patrons or just the general public who's interested in what they're doing and really make a connection. And I think that's a lot of what we're about, is connecting the community so that artists meet with educators, artists meet with the public, artists meet with patrons, and everybody sort of gets on the same page and understands what the other's all about.
Mm-hmm. And while they're maybe teaching, you're also helping them in developing portfolio techniques, marketing ideas, and things like that?
Absolutely, absolutely. All of those things will be a part of the general package, if you will.
Now, I know a lot of different ideas went into the building at the beginning, and everything involved from, you know, gallery space, which is a part of it, classrooms, but studio space was talked about at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Is studio space still a part of this?
We still have 7 studios up mm-hmm. on the 4th floor, so they get great views of downtown Tulsa, which is cool. And the idea there is to not only showcase a regional or national artist that might be coming to do an artist in residence, that could also do some coaching, if you will, and some training of other artists while they're here, besides teaching classes and engaging with the public. But again, that is the space where they will be juried in through portfolio selection. There's a committee that's established, an artist selection committee. So that they
and
will
so they'll be
able
here
to,
for a short amount of time, like a year,
like
a couple
probably,
of years.
We're guessing probably 12 to 18 months. And then we'll rotate them so that they will have that time to establish themselves, build portfolios, do those kinds of things, and then they will move on and make room for the next round of artists that will come in.
So give us a sense of what this, for those who are not really involved in the arts, what does that studio space mean for a young artist outside of where they would normally work, say a home or a bedroom or something like that? What do these spaces offer?
Well, two things. One, they'll... Well, maybe two or three. They'll be in the Brady Arts District. So you've got just this creative outlet and energy that's coming down and really growing in the community. So there's and like-minded people sort of in that space. So they're part of a community now and not so isolated as they might be if they were just home working in a bedroom and so forth. Speaking of which, having a dedicated space that's truly designed to be studio space and not just the corner of some closet somewhere or some bedroom
or the garage
which there's nothing wrong with any of those things, but now they have the dedicated space. And so one of the things we found is we were trying to figure out first what all a new visual arts center would look like in terms of what we would be able to offer was a resounding number of artists saying, oh, we need studio space, oh, we need studio space, oh, we need studio space. It just kept coming up. And and studio space in the downtown. So as we were looking for locations where we might be, all of our efforts really focused on downtown because that was the burgeoning area. That was the area where the next big thing could come.
Yeah. Now, I assume these are like high ceilings, so, you know.
Mm-hmm. You can do pretty large-scale work.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. There are always limitations. I can't remember now how exactly.
Somebody will want to do 1 foot higher than you have.
Of course. So they'll have to cut it in half and put it together later. But yeah.
Okay. So studio space is a part of it. Exhibition space.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is the philosophy of Hardesty Art Center as far as exhibiting work? Will it be mainly Oklahoma artists? Will there be thematic shows? What exactly? What is the programming philosophy? Have you figured that out yet?
Yes to all. And the director of the Hardesty Arts Center, Kathy McCrees, can answer that question much better than I can. But in general, it is there's an artist selection process and so forth. The first exhibition that we're doing is organized by the Oklahoma Visual Arts Coalition, and it's a survey of Oklahoma artists and a couple of surrounding regional artists. But the idea was to showcase Oklahoma and the creativity that's coming from within our state. Other exhibits could be regional or national in focus over time. It's all going to be driven by our arts education programming. So as we look to the future, it will be focused on those things that we want to do, experiences that we want to offer the public, experiences that we want to offer children in the through the classrooms, and how can this be an extension of some of what we already are doing in terms of arts education that will just let that flourish and grow and be more dynamic.
But I assume you're looking at like young professionals who are just getting their portfolio to go sort of group shows or solo shows perhaps that are showcasing these emerging talents as they're developing.
Absolutely. And we'll be working with more established artists like artists in residence that we can bring in to then work with the younger up and coming artists so that they can learn from not so much about technique and so forth as in simply vision, how to convey message and grow professionally. So our idea is that we will just everyone that will come in there will leave a more experienced, more capable, more understanding participant in this community and then ready to even give back more.
It sounds like though it's you're looking at a number of levels, new professionals, you know, emerging professionals, but also maybe college age and maybe even younger than college age.
Absolutely.
So you have different messages for both those, you know, those different
all
audiences.
The various constituents, sure. And we're working very closely with all of our local universities, tied very closely with the University of Tulsa.
Now, how's that? How now? For example, the Zero Center is just right around the corner,
right? Which is cool,
and they have studio space. They have gallery space.
Right.
How will the two interact? I mean, although I would assume their studio space is probably geared for their actual students or MFA students,
and that's really the difference. Theirs is focused on faculty and grad students and graduate faculty at the Zero Center for Art Education. So we're the more general public, if you will, in terms of just artists from any particular background, any particular genre, any particular whatever. They're really focused on their 2D program at the University of Tulsa, which is great and a great showcase for them and a lot more space and a lot more opportunity for that program. So ours is targeted much more broadly, I guess, if you will, so that we're working with artists from not necessarily affiliated with the University of Tulsa.
And I assume when you're working for when you talk about children's programming, you're talking about intensive studio art programs or more general arts education?
More intensive studio programming because that's what we'll be able to offer at the Hardesty Arts Center. It really is an extension of our current arts education programs, though, in terms of our artists in the schools, Harwellen Institute, where we train non-art teachers how to incorporate the arts in the classroom. The idea being that all those programs that happen out in the community will continue to happen. Nothing changes with that. Now those students and their families can come to the AHA, our affectionate name for the Hardesty Art Center, and continue those experiences after school when youth are often sort of getting into trouble and so forth. Well, let's have some programming to give them more engaged after school. Let's do something on weekends when they're with their families more and can give them that kind of extension of the learning that's happened in the classroom, of the learning that's happened in their school.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of those community art programs are already geared like that. Is this a level, say, beyond what they would receive at those other community arts like Waterworks and Tulsa Girls Art School, for
sure.
example? And those are all, you know, interesting art projects.
They're fabulous art projects. And again, programs that we work and coordinate with, because one of our biggest issues is that we don't want to duplicate services. And that's always been foremost in our minds. So, for example, we are not offering ceramics, even though that's part of a 3D normal program. One would think, well, there's Clayworks, there's a number of really fine Melkorn Schucker Studio, and so we're going to be working with them, and we'll simply send our students that are interested in that, here, go over here and do this. We're not offering glassblowing because we have the Tulsa Glassblowing Studio. There was no reason to duplicate those services. And so we're really trying to work in concert with all of the great art programs and arts education opportunities that are existing out there, and we're still trying to fill in gaps.
You're just filling gaps in
right,
exactly.
Uh-huh. Where there's a greater need, we can do this. No pressure on Tulsa Artists Coalition, and I'm not going to say this is going to definitely happen, but one of the things we talked about is their 5x5 show, which is awesome for them, that they have on May 5th. But it's so crowded in their space. Well, we may be able to offer them a space where they could do their show in our space, have more space, get more artists, have more patrons come in, blah, blah, blah. Don't know if that's going to necessarily happen, but it's an opportunity. And so now we can have those kinds of discussions because now there's a vehicle to do it with.
My guest today is Ken Busby, the CEO of the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa. The Arts and Humanities Council will be opening their Hardesty Arts Center in the Brady District. They have its grand opening here in a little less than 2 weeks,
yes.
Next weekend. Yeah, and opening show featuring OVAC artists from the Oklahoma Visual Arts Coalition. And Ken is our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, one of the things about the Hardesty Arts Center is it's a big footprint in what is becoming one of our densest parts of downtown, as if you look at the construction.
Absolutely.
What is the economic impact of a facility like this? I know that as somebody who is immersed in the arts but also immersed in governance, and you know, you're one of those people that have to make the connections between art and art support and government.
Sure.
What is the economic impact of, say, this Hardesty Arts Center, as well as maybe the rest of the surrounding arts organizations that are being renovated and buildings going up?
Sure. Well, to give the Tulsa Regional Chamber focus comment, I believe I've heard, but this is not just Brady, but with all of the downtown construction over the last couple of years and what's happening in Brady and so forth, there's over $400 million of new construction and rehab construction and things going on downtown. That's a tremendous boost to the economy, not just in terms of sales tax that's generated, but in terms of jobs of workers that are being put to work. People then have to staff the new facilities that are being opened. And so it's a great opportunity to truly demonstrate the power of the arts as an economic development tool. I mean, it's something, as you were talking about, as you deal with the government, so it's something we always talk about because there is that kind of impact, the focus on tourism and creating, for me right now, the Brady Arts District is going to be the new destination for Tulsa. Tulsa's already a destination, but now the thing to tout will be the Brady Arts District, because by next May, June, when everything with the Matthews Warehouse and all that's going on there with our facility and everything else that's currently under construction finished, and the streets cleaned up and no more cones and we can do all of those things in the Brady with the hotel, with restaurants, all the things that are happening, it will become a marketing destination. And not only for Tulsans to come down and enjoy regionally, the state, and then going out, you know, in a multi-state area. And I think that's going to really demonstrate for people the resurgence of downtown and something that longtime residents, remember of Tulsa in the 40s, 50s, even into the 60s, we're now rebirthing that and driving it. And the cool thing is it's driven by the arts.
I also like the fact that, you know, the railroad for such a long time was a dividing line, and the development is actually happening on surrounding that rail line that has been the traditional marker between haves and have-nots in our city.
True.
And I think it's kind of interesting that development is sort of blossoming along that old rail line
on both sides.
Yeah, and it is interesting because when you think of the old downtown, it was Main Street between, you know, 1st and 6th. Years ago, even
right.
Before
oh,
the
sure.
Williams Center.
Oh, sure.
And now it is basically centered on essentially a freight line.
it really is. And thank goodness we have the quiet zone now so that the train horns are not going off as much and as frequently. No, it really is. And so there's now a really nice blurring. And I think that's what, as you develop a community, I think that's what you're hoping to see. It's not a haves and have-nots anymore. It's not a north versus south. It is we're in this together. And so with Brady, with Blue Dome, with Greenwood, just the Central Business District of downtown, BOK Center to the One Oak Field, it's all coming together. And Brady sort of is the connector of all of that activity. And so now our biggest challenge is parking, which is a great problem to have and something that I know we as a community and a city will be addressing at some point because we're talking about it. But it's great when things are happening at the Canes and the old lady on Brady and BOK and the ballpark. And oh, my goodness, though, now where do we put all the cars of all these people that are coming down to experience all that has to happen? So parking, you know, will be the next thing that I think we'll have to focus on as a community. But
it's also gets a demonstration of what density can do to a downtown, because that's the whole thing, is our whole downtown has become less dense because we have so many surface parking lots.
Right.
All of a sudden, you're not walking from gallery to restaurant to gallery to, nightclub to... Mm-hmm. apparel shop or you know, a locally owned shop of some sort.
Right.
Right now in many parts of downtown, it's surface parking lot, lone outpost, surface parking lot. Now you start to begin to see the power of density in the downtown.
Absolutely.
And this is really going to change in the next 6 months, I think.
Oh, absolutely. The livable, walkable downtown where you live, work, and play. I think it's a dream of every urbanist, obviously. And we are getting there. And so it's great to see, because as you're probably well aware, we are currently about 60% surface parking in downtown Tulsa with all the buildings that we've lost over time and just parking lots that exist. I'm really happy about the Hardesty Arts Center because we've eliminated one parking lot, although we also eliminated our parking. But, you know, but we were able to eliminate a parking lot and build an absolutely incredible structure on that space. And so the built environment is so critical. The density that you were speaking of is so critical to our evolution as a community. And this is what I think, certainly for, I mean, obviously we are a very automobile focused community, and but we're getting better about driving, parking, and then exploring a little bit. And now there's something to explore. Once you do park your car, within a few blocks, there's a lot of opportunities and a lot of great things happening. And so you can really embrace that and have a full experience, not just getting out, going into one place, getting back in your car, driving over here, getting out, walking. You know, it's changing, literally changing the landscape. It's changing the way we approach living in a city.
We're talking about the Hardesty Arts Center in the Brady District, which the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa will be opening in just a little under 2 weeks. Their grand opening and their first exhibit in the new space. Will the building be 100% complete at this point? I mean, I know
how
you're
do
really
you fine. 100%. It's close.
Let me put it this way. It seems to be a lot of work going on at the building right now.
It's intense. And as I've learned from talking with people, the last couple of weeks are always the most intense. For all intents and purposes, yes, it will be open and people will be able to tour the entire facility. There'll still be a little tweaking that needs to be done on the third and fourth floors. First and second are really in good shape. The current exhibit is being loaded in even as we speak in preparation for the grand opening. So our VIP opening is Friday, December 14th, our Avant-Garde Society on December 15th, and then the public opening on Sunday, December 16th. And so we'll be close. We'll be tweaking a little bit over the holidays and probably have it fully done in mid-January.
And when will artists come moving in and start a studio space? You know, when I heard about this idea, I was thinking of like the Torpedo Art Center in Alexandria,
sure.
Virginia, which is a great,
mm-hmm.
an old factory.
An old torpedo factory.
Yeah.
Well, they made torpedoes during the war. Yeah.
And then can totally convert it into artist mm-hmm. studio space for the most part,
right.
with little exhibition space.
Mm-hmm.
But it became a focal point for that community right there on the harbor.
Absolutely.
Is that the sort of model that you were really looking?
We certainly looked a lot at the Torpedo Factory. There are many differences, but the key difference, I think, though, is really going back to the mission of the Arts and Humanities Council of
the
Tulsa
education.
On arts education. So that is still our first driver for all that we're doing. And then the secondarily is the artist and really engaging them and to the studio work and the teaching opportunities and all that. But again, we've always stayed true to our mission of the Arts and Humanities Council. And the Torpedo Factory is really much more just total artist centered and just about,
right.
And I don't mean the commercialization of their art, but I mean, it's just about getting in there, selling art and making it happen and marketing it and a great mass of people at one place doing it. Nothing wrong with that, but we had to be a little bit different because of our strategic mission.
Well, we wish you great success with the opening of that.
Thank
it's
you.
Coming up in less than 2 weeks. And my guest today, Ken Busby, CEO of the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa. In our last couple minutes, I want to ask you about another hat you've been wearing. You just chaired a task force looking at the beautification of the city.
Ah, yes, America's most beautiful city.
Yeah, and so what are some of the key findings you came away with?
Well, primarily one that is something that we were actually labeled proudly back in 1957 through an article in the Reader's Digest.
Right.
And our key thing is we're going to reclaim that brand. We are America's most beautiful city. We're going to do some strategic signage and so forth to at some of our key vistas on the interstates. And as you come into our community, you're looking at America's most beautiful city. We're going to work on the I-244 corridor between the airport and downtown because that is a key. The airport is such a key to all
That's
of
the
visitors.
Front door.
It's the front door,
yeah.
And then from that front door, you want them to have a good experience. So, with you know trees and plantings and so forth, really cleaning up the corridor so that, and then as you come into downtown, so that you know you have arrived. It's that idea of destination once again, and so we really want to focus on that.
Well, you mentioned that particular corridor. Mm-hmm. There are two other corridors. That's the I-44 corridor. Is there any thoughts about changing the look of coming in via the interstate?
Sure, and certainly with the I-44 expansion, that is helping the look of that entry point into. And yes, we're absolutely looking at that as well. We just picked one to start because it's a massive project when you really look at trying to revision a city and really try to determine what's going to really make it better and make it embraceable as a community. But yes, we're looking at all of those things. Our recommendations to the mayor and the city council have been. Please look at all of it. Please consider funding this as a priority. Let's look at even some private sponsorship opportunities. What are the things we can do to really help galvanize the community so that we're all lifting up Tulsa and saying, this is a cool place to be. You'll want to be there, and let's help all work together to make it happen.
Well, I think probably the best thing we can do is have more projects like the Artist the Arts Center and basically whether it be non-governmental organizations and nonprofits or entrepreneurs basically taking the risk to do that. I think that will do more than anything.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Well, Ken, as always, it's a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us and good luck with the opening.
Thanks so much, Rich. Appreciate it.
Ken Busby is the CEO of the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa. The Arts and Humanities Council will open their new Hardesty Arts Center, a 42,000-square-foot building devoted to the visual arts, a week from this Sunday, that's Sunday, December 16th, with a grand opening from 1 to 5. More information at their website. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Dr. John Henning Schumann.
It's never really discussed. We don't learn it in med school. There are opaque references to it in residency. Once we're out, it slowly becomes an unpleasant realization. We give it other names and ascribe the motivation or lack thereof to others, our patients. It's selling. Patients look to us for medical advice. It's a vulnerable state to be in. A generation ago, we simply told you what to do, and you did it. Now we practice shared decision-making and make recommendations to you that you are free to accept or reject. The conversations are seldom on the level. Most of you don't want to outright defy us. You risk our wrath, our disfavor, our disappointment, always my parents' strongest weapon. When you don't follow our recommendations, we call you non-compliant. The newer, more politically correct term is non-adherent. Sometimes we just say you're a bad patient. But doctors are really madmen, and of course, increasingly women. We have to sell you our ideas, even when you've become increasingly knowledgeable and justifiably more critical. The truth is, selling is easy most of the time. We believe in what we're offering, intellectually and emotionally, and some of our ideas are so commonplace, colon cancer screening, treatment of high blood pressure, etc., that you are receptive to the ideas. It's a win-win. It gets a lot harder when we don't necessarily believe in what we have to offer or are outright skeptical of something that you ask for. Communication is one of the competencies on which we evaluate trainees. It's vitally important, but we don't teach it or evaluate it well. When it's done well, appealing to both our minds and hearts, it makes the complicated simple and can be appreciated and understood, even by a child. My wish is for better, more straightforward communication amongst all of us.
Dr. John Henning Schumann is the director of the Internal Medicine Residency Program at the OU Tulsa School of Community Medicine and the author of the blog Glass Hospital. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at our website, publicradiotulsa.org. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.